this workshop. It's titled Inclusive Media and Divided Communities. And the original title, I was asked by Prometheus to do this workshop, and the original title was Progressive Media and Conservative Communities. And I immediately said, can I change that? Because that suggests a whole bunch that I'm not terribly comfortable with. So, but the reason they wanted me to come and do this is because WGXC will be broadcasting to two traditionally conservative counties, which are Greene and Columbia counties. And so essentially, they want to know how do you, you know, and there are lots of workshops that are saying, how do you use your radio station to organize? Or, you know, I mean, I was, you know, walking along looking at different things, and there is most of us in community radio, most of us in public radio are you could easily call us all, I hate doing this, but you could call us all progressive, right? So we're liberal, left-leaning people, generally speaking. Boo, are you not a liberal, left-leaning person?
No, I wouldn't describe myself as a liberal.
Oh, really?
Left-leaning, yeah.
Okay, communist. Well, okay, so yeah, you don't want to make general assumptions, but that is the sort of understood thing as far as Prometheus goes to a large extent, and some other folks. So at WMMT in Whitesburg, which is part of Apple Shop, and those of you who don't know what Apple Shop is, it's APPAL, as in Appalachia. It is the 40-year-old, actually just turned 40, which is the Museum of Modern Art in February, just did this big 40-year retrospective. We make documentary films, we have a radio station, we have a record label, we have a prison project, which is Thousand Kites. We did another workshop yesterday. And their show airs on WMMT. We also have AMI, which we train youth in how to make films and radio. And we have so many different projects under one whole thing. But the radio station is the best project at Apple Shop. But that's how we feel. So we're celebrating our 25th anniversary this November, and the area that we are in is the coal fields, and that area right now is, and since the beginning of time that they discovered coal there, it is, there's like Harlan County was right next door to us, Bloody Harlan, you know, the award-winning Oscar film, Harlan County, USA. Because of the labor struggles, because of, you know, you get shot at, you get, you know, you sort of fight the coal industry down there, and it can bring you lots of problems in your personal and professional life. I know of many people who are fighting the coal industry there, currently fighting like mountaintop removal, and they can't find jobs because no one will hire them. Their kids get, you know, rocks thrown at them on the playground. My own daughter, who's here, when we first moved to Whitesburg, and she told everyone that I worked at Apple Shop, the kids like were, oh, your mom's a hippie, and she got a couple rocks thrown at her. But anyway, so she's learned not to tell people what her mom does. But so it's a, you know, it's a constant struggle down there, and it's a real battle. It's a real battle for those of us who like to have clean air and clean water, who, you know, don't want our houses knocked off their foundations by blasting. I mean, it's a real crazy thing. But what's so interesting about it is because, you know, there's so many, it's so divided between the people who say this is the oldest mountain chain in the world, let's not destroy it, and the people that say people of Appalachia has been taken advantage of and made fun of, and they're complete stereotypes and all of that, let's change that. And then there are those who say, I need a job, I need to feed my family. There were no other jobs here. And that's, coal companies keep out other industries because they don't want the competition for jobs. That's well documented. So we're on two different sides of this issue where we are. And so WMNT as the community radio station in this area, and we broadcast over 50 counties in Kentucky, West Virginia, Southwest Virginia, Tennessee, and North Carolina. So we cover Appalachia pretty well. But we have to serve all of our listeners. our mission is to be, our mission statement is to be a 24-hour voice of the mountain people. So that means everything. And that you could tell that from our music programming. We have old-time music, we have bluegrass music, we have hip-hop, we have blues, we have jazz, we have a world beat show, we have a honky-tonk show, everything. Because mountain people are everything. So I guess the sort of a different way of looking at this is how do you sort of change the world without alienating the people that don't share your philosophies or politics? How do you speak to the people who don't vote the same way that you vote when you go to the polls, that sort of thing? There's this great article I was reading earlier, and I'd actually recommend it to Sam, and it's in one of the newspapers out there. It's from Williamsport, Pennsylvania. It's about gas drilling, which is a whole other issue. And it's titled Gas Drillers Are People Too. And there was this great thing in there in this article, and it was just a really good sort of metaphor. And it said, you know, those of us who are on opposite sides of the political spectrum or opposite sides of an issue, it's like being in an eighth grade dance, and you've got your boys and your girls on opposite sides of the gym, and they cling to their sides and they won't come in the middle to dance. And I feel that we in community radio, it is not only our job to...
Hi.
It is not only our job to spread information, to tell the news, to tell the truth, all of these things. It is also our job, I believe, to bring people together. And that's something we really focus on at WMMT, and we fight about it staff-wise. And it's a daily sort of us negotiating between ourselves and our programmers and our listeners and what time of year it is. Because if it's near fund drive, nothing anti-coal goes on the radio station. And that's just how it is, unfortunately. But I think the best thing that we do is bring different people. Like, I'm going to play some audio clips from various sort of voices that we have on the air, and it's sort of an example of how you can invite your entire community to be on your radio station. You don't ever want to turn any audience away, because one, the simple fact is if you're working at a radio station, if you're working anywhere, you have to have money. That is that is the most important thing, that you have to have money. You have to have money so that you can have a tower, so that you can pay for the equipment when it breaks down, so you can pay your people, so you can print brochures, bumper stickers, right? Money. And that's, you know, it's a sad fact, but it's the absolute truth. So you never, ever want someone who may consider themselves to be a conservative, right-wing nut job that you don't want to spend time with. But if they like the music that you're playing on the radio and they like the public affairs programming, they may just write you a check, and that's awesome. You know, you really want that.
Hi.
But without selling your soul, obviously. So what? One way that we've done this is we I'm gonna play some audio. We, you know, your programmers and your volunteers are always very opinionated folks, generally, because they're on the air. Why? Because they are performers. And I was we had a writer in from a magazine, and he said, why do you think, you know, how do you get these people to do this for free, to come on? And I said, well, everyone believes that they have the best taste in music. You know, like, I think I do. And so everybody thinks I got to share that, you know, because I have the best taste in music. But because of those very sort of dominating personalities, they will share their opinions on the air. So I've got one programmer. His name is Bill Andy Farley, and he is a left-wing atheist, anti-war, you know, like really hardcore dude. So when the invasion of Iraq happened in 2003, Bill Andy was on the air talking about, you know, war is evil, we shouldn't go in, Bush lied, you know, all these weapons of mass destruction, if there aren't any, that sort of thing. So he's on the air doing this, which then, of course, angered a lot of listeners, and they're calling in. And not only that, but our local government. Like, we had a funding opportunity, a federal funding opportunity, and we had to take our application to get signed by someone, a local government, and no one would sign it. They just wouldn't, because of our anti-war So there's that, and then there's also that we've had, we aired right before last fall's fund drive, we aired a public opinion piece about the coal industry. And all it really was, it wasn't even a public opinion piece, all it was somebody went to an anti-coal rally, asked people questions, and it's the show called Kids Radio. It's actually targeted towards children. And he asked them sort of child-friendly questions that, you know, like a kid could get, and then put it on the air. And then complete backlash. And our fall fund drive only made $15,000. And we were told that the coal companies are telling coal miners, do not give money to this station. Do not listen to this station. So we get secretive phone calls from coal miners who won't tell us their names and that to let us know that they are listening. So, but we had to do something when this happened because we can't lose that audience. They are invaluable in many ways, money-wise, and also just goodwill, and also, you know, as human beings, and we don't want to lose those people. So what we, one way that we dealt with this was to ask our audience to let us know their opinions, and we would record them, and we would put them on the air. And so I'm going to play it, just the thing, and it runs on our station now. And this was in 2003. This still runs on our station. It is a call to people to share their opinions. We haven't been getting a whole lot of people. I get a whole lot of regular, like, strange emails from people screaming at me. But it's fascinating because the difference in people's opinions that came in really is a beautiful thing, and it exists in every community radio station if you're doing it right, because you should have a whole varied amount of opinions. So I'm going to play this, and it's just a few short clips just sort of give you an idea of how we do this at MMT.
The coal industry, which is at the center of our history,
is that too loud? Is it all right?
Is today at the center of many important questions.
So this is the spot that airs on the radio still.
From global warming to the impact of the recession, to clean coals, to the health and safety of miners, to the very future of our communities.
Is it loud?
It's out. It's on.
In our own community, there are many voices and many opinions on these things. We'd like to be sure all of them get heard on WMMT. We'd like to know who you'd like to hear on the air, what issues to cover, what opinions. All viewpoints are welcome. Let us know yours. You can email us at wmmtfm@appleshop.org. Or go to the contact section of the website, wmmtfm.org. Or call the radio office at 606-633-0108. Thanks for your input, and thanks for listening.
I think he has the wrong.
My whole family is coal miners, deep mine mostly. Some of them has worked strip mines and still do. I have mixed feelings about the strip mines in eastern Kentucky. I hate what it has done to our mountains and to our streams and to our environment. But right on the other hand, I can look at it, it's kind of a twofold thing. I can look at the industries and the places at hospitals and malls and things like that that they have built on strip mine property. And I feel in my heart, as long as they are utilizing that for the betterment of our community, then I guess it's okay.
First generation coal industry worker, and my father, mechanical engineer, and I'm a civil engineer. And I've noticed the improvement in the environment on reclaimed mountaintop removal jobs in this area. And I think it's a shame that we let people in other areas of this county and the state and other areas tell us that we can't have the type of mining that benefits this area.
I have turned my back on mountaintop removal while people in my family get their paychecks from it. It's become the quick and cheap way for companies to get their profits as coal grows scarce in our region. Barbecues are tense when the person sitting across the table from you lost the mining job that you spend a great amount of time speaking against. It's not easy feeling like you're fighting the people you love. I constantly feel torn between two worlds, a community built around coal and an activist community trying to change it.
Okay, my name's Billy Ray Fannin, and I'm a third generation coal miner. I've worked about 34 years in the mines, and as far as our mining industry, I believe I know for a fact that it's in bad times right now. I don't think it'll ever get any better because the people have just turned their backs to the coal miners, and they've not weighed out their options, and seeing that they're destroying a way of life in the eastern Kentucky and Appalachian Mountains.
That's the next clip, the guitar. So the first part where the guy was talking about, you know, send in your, we want to hear both sides of your opinion. This airs, I think that he had the website wrong, I do believe, because it used to be at appleshop.org, now we have our own. So my sort of suggestion is, because we do that, and so no one can ever say, no one in our community since we started airing that can ever say that we don't welcome them. And I would get this stuff all the time. For instance, I had to, when I first started the job, I had to let one of the employees go because she wasn't doing her job. But she got on Facebook and she did all these things and said that I fired her because her husband was a strip miner. So we would get constant calls into the office of miners, and I'd get a transfer and I'd pick up the phone, and people would start like cursing at me and screaming at me. And I explained, you know, one, that's not the truth. And two, I said, you know, do you listen to WMMT? Yes. And then I would say, do you often hear our call to ask you to share your opinions on the air? And they were like, well, yeah. I said, well, have you ever done that? You know, and generally people said no, but sometimes people said yeah, or they said, oh, my brother did it back a couple of years ago. But it is good to have, because no one can ever say that you're not open to sharing all viewpoints on your radio station. I was saying this yesterday in the prison workshop, because I think it was Kyle with WGXC. Were you in there?
No, but that was the industry that I was looking at. In this area that would parallel,
yeah,
that side of accountability.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have it's very similar, because we have a whole bunch of prisons where I live, and then there are a whole bunch of prisons here. And so Kaya with WGXC asked, you know, because we were talking about doing this prison show that we do on WMMT, and she said, but how do I expand this? I want sort of longer stories. I want sort of real, you know, how do I expand this? And so that I can try to change things, you know. And my answer sort of was that just by having it on the air, you're changing things, really. Because really no one thinks of the prison industry, no one thinks of the prisoners as people who are loved by their family members, you know. No one thinks of them as real human beings. We think they've done something bad, put them away, think, oh, they're not there to, like, freak us out, you know. So just by putting on the air personal stories of prisoners and their families, that immediately your audience says, what, these are humans too? Because that story is never told. So simply by us living in our region and putting on the stories that people say, like me personally, honestly, like me personally, the water that comes out of my faucet at my house has methane in it, it is flammable. I shower in water that I can hold a lighter to and it bursts into flames. I take a shower in it every day. I give it to my cats. I drink bottled water, but who can afford to, like, bathe in bottled water, you know? So, but by putting that on the air, you know, by someone just saying, you know, my house was knocked off its foundation by an explosion, or my whole family's land was bought out from under us, and we didn't know what was happening, and they purchased the mineral rights and not the actual, like, all these stories, they're not being told where we are. Through commercial radio, they're definitely not. If you listen to commercial radio where we are, it is pro-coal, pro-coal. I mean, constantly. You cannot, McDonald's has the sign up in the window that says coal for kids, you know, like it's everywhere. So those stories aren't getting told except by us. But we're also telling the stories of the coal miners. You know, so in prisons here, with the prison issue here rather, you would want to tell the stories of your prisoners and the prisoners' families, and then also, you know, I think the other side of that is the whole, my,
guards.
Yes, I was going to say, I would also be telling the story of sort of drug-related offenses, all these things to get the word out about these things are not good, and then you tell the story about the prison guards.
But that's not the other side of that debate. When the senators of the country are debating for keeping the prisons open, the pro-prisons people never discuss the ethics of the Rockefeller drug laws or any of that shit. They're like, my constituents need to have a job. This is the most important industry. They're frank about it.
Right.
There's no pretense. Yeah. We have got to keep the doors open.
Right.
We need this tax money because we've all lost our farms and it's the only thing we've got.
Right.
They don't pretend for a second that they're doing anything besides warehousing people for a profit. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then there's all this research that says if a prison moves into a community, the community itself gets depressed. The guards go home and the amount of domestic violence in your community is increased. The amount of suicides in your community is increased. Because, I mean, good Christ, if your job is to keep someone else in lockdown, you know, what does that do to, like, your soul, really?
Well, so if you're in jail every day, I mean, if you're working there for 30 years,
yeah,
people with sentences are getting that after 5.
Yeah.
But you got life.
Every day you're in there. Yeah, exactly. So if you're telling that story, if you're telling the story of what actually happens to a real community when a prison moves in, so you can say, it's a job, it's jobs, it's jobs. And yeah, we're all, everybody, a job, job, job. And you can say that, and you can understand that, and you can talk to people who are unemployed and they say, you know, I need a job. But then you also tell the story of what happens to the community when prisons move in. It's really horrible what happens to communities. You can watch them just slide down once a prison's built. The education goes nowhere. You know, people, it turns into like just the ugliest place on a human level. And if you're telling those stories up here, then maybe people start listening and they start thinking about jobs a little bit different, because a job is a great thing, but if it makes you kill yourself, maybe you don't want that job, you know? I was just learning, I think it was last night, that here in Hudson there was this proposal for a cement plant. I think you and I were talking about this earlier. And so, you know, and it's local jobs, right? And this was, up until slightly recently, a very sort of blue-collar place. And then, you know, people from the city moved in and they opened all the galleries and the restaurants and bought all the houses. So they wanted to put a cement plant here in town, like some Dutch company. And the local people who need jobs, yes, give us a job. But then the people who have come here and they have the money, they said, I don't want my sky, you know, my horizon interrupted with smokestacks. And we all understand that, right? We don't want our horizon interrupted, but people need jobs, and you know, the people with the money won, and people who are local and needed jobs did not win. And you know, and how would you cover that story? You would cover both sides of that story. You would cover the side of the guy saying, I can't feed my family, you know, I'm on unemployment, it's about to run out. And then you would, in the same exact story, you would cover the people saying, you know, the pollution that will come from those smokestacks. Do we really want to look out towards our beautiful river and see this, you know? So you would cover both sides of that. But I will say this, and this is sort of the secret that we do at MMT, is clever editing. So there was the Army Corps of Engineer hearings going on in our area, and it was all about the laws that actually exist on the books saying that you cannot do mountaintop removal. Those laws have been on the books since 1977. No one adheres to them, though. So the Army Corps of Engineers came, and they did a bunch of meetings in West Virginia, Kentucky, Southwest Virginia, and so the coal companies trucked in their miners, and they all had these bright neon shirts on that say, coal, our future, coal keeps the lights on. And then there are those of us that, you know, came for other reasons, because we disagree with that or because we were covering it. So when we aired the piece about the Army Corps of Engineer hearing. And, you know, I'm sorry, there is no dispute. Mountaintop removal is horrible. It's horrible, horrible. Even the people who do it know it's horrible. They don't want to do it, but they say, it's a job, don't take it away from me. But we had people standing up and saying, but the creek by my house is black, and, you know, the water's poison. My child can't go out and play because of the dust, and, you know. And then people standing up and screaming at that woman, go back to California, you hippie. You know? And she's like, I've lived here my entire life, you know, born and raised. So when we aired that story, the way that we did that was, and it sounds kind of, I don't know, I don't think it's unethical, really. But it's just the way that you do it. The guy that that is super pro coal, super pro mountaintop removal, you air what he said, and he sounds kind of crazy. You know what I mean? And then you take the people that are pro clean water, pro air, and maybe you cut a clip of them in which they sound not so crazy. And so when the workshop was first sent to me is, you know, progressive media and conservative. So how do you get, how do you organize? How do you get the word out? How do you say this is what I believe in? And I think this is what you should believe in too. And really it kind of does it for itself. Like the Glenn Beck rally in DC, if you've watched any of the clips from those people, I mean, you watch those people, you listen to what they say, and you can't help it, but they don't sound very smart, right? Because it's a lot of fear-based stuff. So it's not very hard to sort of push a progressive agenda just by really sort of telling the truth and airing real audio clips. But those are just sort of different things. And in a little while, I want to hear in your own communities what sort of the dividing things are, what the issues are. I have another piece of audio to play, which is really, really fun, I think. And it is just to show, in saying, put your entire community on your radio station. This is a clip that will show you sort of MMT's programming. The first guy, I really, like, I wish he was on a screen and I had, the words at the bottom of the screen to tell you what he's actually saying, because he has such a deep, thick Appalachian accent that you guys, I can understand him, but you guys probably won't be able to. But I will, as he's talking, I will say, and then he just said this, because it's serious, like, you really can't understand anything he's saying. And then after him, you'll hear a clip of a piece of our public affairs programming. So. And this is actual audio pulled directly from his show.
I tell you what you need to do, bro. Fitch Creek song coming up too. Along with it, I'm gonna play my Charlie P. Go get that on before I forget it. And I gotta play the old Kenny one over at Fraser Creek from all the boys on Fraser Creek.
So just tell you, the Fraser Creek, everything else, he is naming down all of the strip mines that are working, and they're all working third shift. This is a late night show. And they call in and they request phone calls from him, right? Or they request songs. So he is naming down all the different strip mine people that have called in and said, hey, can you play me this song? So that's what you can't, I don't know if you guys can understand it, but there's a whole bunch of strip miners, so.
Say, Kenny, we'll get you good and broke. They said you're about to smother out over there or something. I don't know. Black Raven said it, don't know what the deal is, but Lord have mercy, you'll be like me. Anyway, here we go. Furrow Street, Fedge Creek, some creek down in Pike County.
I'm Jason Johnson, reporting for WMMT's Community Correspondence Corps. As the story of coal unfolds, perhaps the most controversial subject is mountaintop removal mining. It's the focus of an upcoming event in Washington, D.C. called Appalachia Rising. To better understand its purpose and what it means for the ongoing debate on coal, I spoke with a number of people from across the region who plan on attending. When I asked Bev May of Floyd County, Kentucky about the event, here's what she told me.
Appalachia Rising is a gathering of folks from Appalachia and supporters who are calling for an end to mountaintop removal and a renewal of the Appalachian economy.
The event will take place September 25th through 27th and will be a weekend conference followed by a march on Monday at the Capitol.
Which, that's why I won't be here tomorrow, because I'm going to that march. So that's just an example. Like, that you could not get more different than those two people right there. One, Jason, who's reporting, is he's a VISTA working at the Pine Mountain Settlement School, and I think he's like from Chicago or something. And then the other dude is King Daddy, and he's a strip miner and an underground miner. So that's just sort of to reinforce the whole idea of all voices on your radio station. So And now I'm sort of curious, you know, where you guys are, what are the sort of issues that are happening in your area? What are you sort of dealing with in your own communities? Like, and the reason, and I know not everybody may have a clearly divided issue. It may just come down to conservative versus progressive or something like that. And I immediately thought of like healthcare reform, which is such a lightning rod, you know? And how would you cover that if that is the thing in your community? You know, like when you think of all the, during the town meetings that they were doing, when people bringing guns and stuff, you know? How would you cover that? And I, how we would cover it at MMT is that the real, true personal stories. So we would tell the personal story of somebody, you know, if you've seen Michael Moore's Sicko, like the story of the woman whose kid died because they kept transferring hospitals because the health insurance wasn't right. Like that, I don't care who you are, like that kills you, right? But then you can also turn around and you know, and talk to, I don't know, I guess you could, maybe someone in the healthcare industry that maybe says, you know, oh, we wouldn't get paid as much, or, you know, we would have to, you know, the red tape we'd have to go through. So real personal stories is how we would cover that. But are there any sort of, I mean, I know you were talking about the prison issues, but are there any sort of things in your communities that you guys are dealing with?
Well, I live in New York City, so you wouldn't normally think of it as very divided. And I guess I didn't really either until the whole controversy started around the Islamic Center, Ground Zero. And so I reported on that for Free Speech Radio News. And so there was a rally in late August I went to, and I interviewed people from both sides. And I could just feel the hatred from the people that were against the mosque. And it was like you said, it's based on fear. And I just felt like people were ready to kind of, they were really close just being violent, because they really felt like they were under assault and under attack. And there's gonna be this this terrorist headquarters built right on Ground Zero, and like, you know, they had lost family and friends.
Right.
And this would be like the ultimate desecration. And like in Islam, they build a mosque when they have a victory. And this is what they honestly believed. And then I went to the smaller rally that day, which was for the Islamic Center. And people, it was kind of subdued. And there was like a few Muslim people there. And this one lady was just like, you know, I've lived here for 20 years. I was here after 9/11. And you know, there was a lot of instances of attacks against Muslims. And I wasn't scared then, but I'm scared like today. I'm scared. Like, I'm just the first time I've ever been scared in New York. And then so I did that story that happened the following Monday. And then a week and a half later, I did a follow-up story about all the incidents of hate crimes that had happened. Like in New York, a taxi cab driver got slashed. Someone walked, it was actually a Latino man walked into a mosque when he was drunk and he urinated during a prayer service. And there was an instance upstate where these three like teenagers, I think two of them were African American, I found out today. They were like screaming at a prayer service, and one kid hit a patron at this mosque with his car and like seriously injured him. And it's been going on for months, but it kind of really accelerated the next 2 weeks. So I did a story about that. And then the last story I did was covering the vigils on 9/11. And that day, what really changed was that there was more people at the in support of the Islamic Center that day. And it was on 9/11 too, but this was like a lot of average New Yorkers that were not really, wouldn't normally attend a rally like that, but they were just like, we've had enough. Like this is not acceptable in New York City and in America. Like we've been on the sidelines, but we're gonna come out and make sure we drown out their voices, because this has gone way too far.
So when you were covering that, did you, you said you recorded people from both sides of the situation? How did you handle that in the editing process? Like, did you put the fear on the radio as well as from the fear from both sides, really?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did. Yeah. And that was the first piece when I covered the rallies, both the rallies, and absolutely, that was the main emotion on both sides. Well, it was more like Muslim people. There was like a couple of Muslim out of maybe like 100 people that were there in support of the Islamic Center. There's like maybe a couple Muslim people I saw. And yeah, that was a quote I used. Like, I'm the first time I've been afraid to be a Muslim in America.
Yeah.
And the other side, you know, it was just like saying how the Imam has ties to like terrorists and how this would be a victory for Islam. And that's directly based on fear. It's not really based on like any rational, they have no evidence, you know, of this.
Right.
So, you know, it was disheartening to see that in New York City, but also like on 9/11, the fact that all these people came out,
right.
it was very heartwarming.
Do you have any plans to, how do you plan to cover that in the near future?
Well, it seems like I cover stories when it's like something awful happens, but, you know, I haven't really thought about it, but in the absence of any further acts of violence, I'd like to, you know, maybe, because I feel like it has kind of subdued a bit.
Right.
I don't know what people from the rest of the country have kind of been hearing, but I do feel that people have kind of even accepted it now.
Mm.
But I've been working on a lot of other stuff, so I haven't really thought about it. But I don't know, what have people heard around the country?
I try not to watch the news, cable news specifically. But yeah, I don't know if it's died down at all. Does anyone else?
I think a part of that might have been the backlash against the guy that wanted to burn Qurans in Florida.
That radical Southern preacher guy.
Yeah.
I think that maybe, it seems like since that story kind of died down, the whole issue kind of died down.
Yeah,
okay. After September 11th, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of...
What I love is his church was called the World Outreach Center. It's like, way to reach out to the world, dude.
Yeah, I guess when you have a general calling you up and telling you how to do something,
Yeah, when the president of the United States is like, don't do that. When Sarah Palin's like, don't do that. It's like, okay.
So I think, people just needed to...
Yeah.
Get over.
But it's so, the reason I say how are you going to cover that in the near future is simply because, that story, like that very specific mosque building fear story is really just a small little teeny tiny, it's like, you know, the tip of the iceberg kind of a thing. Because that story is, it is black versus white, it is Muslim versus white, it is Latino versus white, white. But, no, and it's also, you know, it's Jewish people versus black people in specific neighborhoods. It is everybody against everybody. So that's that very specific story that is really over just a building really is suggestive of this entire country's problem, this entire world's problem. And so I was just sort of that as a not a metaphor, I guess, really, but as really just... I mean, it happens all the time. It's one thing or another. It's one group hates another group. It's one group doesn't understand another group, right? So it's constant. And so I think that would be a great opportunity to sort of really explore that and maybe using some of the people that you interviewed, you know? Because I'm real big on the personal stories. That's why I enjoy sort of programming like Radiolab or something like that, you know? When they really get you to, you get to spend a long time with somebody and get to know them. And so sort of by that, whatever their program is on, by the end of it, you're convinced, whether it's whales have feelings or, you know. So I just wonder if you took some of those people, I'm assuming you may, you know, if you really sort of, now that it's calmed down, really sort of explored those people, the different sides, and really got in there and figure out why the people screaming that it's got terrorist affiliations and really sort of explore why they think that, where they heard that, and why they continue to believe it. And then also, it might be a good opportunity to also explore why there, why build it there from the other side, you know? And you know, how much fear do you have as a Muslim? You know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what the Imam said was that if he had known what the controversy would have caused, he wouldn't have done it in the first place. But now that the controversy is there, he can't back down now.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But I think, yeah, if he had another chance, you know,
right,
he wouldn't have done it. But I think I'm really glad I came to this workshop because I realized that it's like the first story I've had to report. I started reporting like a year ago. That's actually... being in New York, I've been able to talk to both sides of an issue.
Right.
Because everything I've reported on has been like so one-sided.
Yeah.
And so I'm from like the South. I'm from Baltimore. I grew up in Baltimore. So I feel like I kind of like abandoned the South. So I just couldn't, I didn't feel like I had a community there. And I had kind of found that in New York, but
yeah.
It's just kind of reminding me, like being here and covering that story is kind of reminding me that that rift is still there. Like,
yeah, yeah.
No matter where you go, I guess. And it's important, it's really important to get both sides.
I mean, it's so funny, like when that piece that you heard, that little bit from that guy Jason, who's talked about Appalachia Rising. We had two different people who are sort of organizers, right? So come to us, and we have a thing called the Community Correspondence Corps, in which we train people in our community how to use the recorders, how to edit audio, how to do interviews, stuff like that. As two different people came to us and said, I want to do a news story on Appalachia Rising. And they are both community organizers. And so, and my, God bless her, that my sweet little Vista who runs the CCC, Sylvia, you know Sylvia, she's like coming in there, she's like, oh, Jason and Will, I want to do this. And yeah, we're really going to tell, we want people to get go there. And really, and I was like, hang on, you know, pull back a little bit. One, are they reporting this as a news piece? Or are they reporting this to promote their own agenda? Like, you really have got to think about that, you know? So we went round and round, and again, my poor Vista, I mean, I feel like I broke her heart, because we're all in that office, and we are all, you know, pro-Appalachia Rising, you know? Like, let's go out there and let's tell the world, you know, screw you guys. We're not going to, you know, you're not going to destroy us so you guys can, you know, have lots of electricity anymore. But you can't. We got into this whole argument about, no, that's not why we're here. We are here to serve our community, not to promote our own agendas. Even though it is hard. It's hard because all you want to put on the air is the don't be afraid, don't be stupid. You know, like it's a mosque and it's freedom of religion in this country, and you want to put that stuff on the air. But how do you bring those sides together if one side doesn't get to hear the other side? So if you're telling the personal story of a Muslim who's scared and they're like, hey, I've lived in this city for, you know, so many years, and I was born here and my parents came here from this country and I went to school here and I work here, and then somebody else who's out there listening is going to be like, wait a second, you know, my brother went to school there and played football there, and waited, you know, so this person might not just be someone to be afraid of, but they might be an actual human being.
It seems like also just maybe you have to do it more than once.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because the person that you're hoping is going to hear the other side and possibly change their mind a little bit,
right,
or see something in some new way, they might not be listening to that time. And so then you need to do, like,
you have to always be doing it.
It's just really hard to get the reach the audience or something that you're trying to get.
I actually have another example I'll share briefly that I just did on Tuesday. So I don't know if you're all familiar with the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. He's like the former journalist Black Panther who got, he is in prison right now on death row for killing a police officer. So that was like 29 years ago when that happened. There's two new films that came out about his case on Tuesday in Philadelphia. And so I went and reported on both the screenings. And so this is for Democracy Now. And so, you know, we run Mumia's commentaries. So it would be very difficult to get the other side in the show. But I went out there to the screening of this film that I actually watched it. It's pretty much like, it's openly racist.
Really?
But it was done by a Black filmmaker, so it's, therefore, it's just legitimate.
Okay.
But I briefly talked to the widow of the man that Mumia is accused of killing.
I was able to get
the filmmaker, and this is before the premiere, so afterwards I told them who I was and who I worked for, and they wouldn't talk to me. But I was able to get that. It was like maybe 35 seconds that I was on Democracy Now! On Tuesday.
Right.
But just to have that voice makes that coverage legitimate. Because after we had those voices, and we had like the filmmaker that was a pro-Mumia and a journalist that's been reporting on the case for like 20 years.
Yeah.
So, but just to have the other side there, I think, is important. Because then you can kind of build a dialogue. Even though our coverage was pretty one-sided, we had like 35 seconds for one side and like 14 minutes for the other. It just kind of shows, you know, has both... choices.
It does, yeah. And you know, and then from the standpoint of covering it, yeah, and then also from a human standpoint, really, I mean, what the hell does she feel like, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, one, you lose your husband, and then two, there's a huge firestorm around it, and people, you know, like, what does that feel like?
Yeah.
So that's a wonderful opportunity, yeah. Huh. I'm going to have to start listening to your stuff on democracy now. So any other sort of, and there was something I was going to say, and
I'm from Montreal, and I volunteer with community radio at CBT, and I also work for the CBC, and it's been really interesting because, like, we don't meet at CKUT. There isn't a whole lot of outreach to people who aren't of a specific mind frame,
right?
Because we don't meet those people in a way. Like, there's enough sort of liberal-minded, progressive minds who tune in, but it's really interesting producing because you can get away without showing the other side, but it's so much. Like, I feel it's so important to seek it out anyways, just to, you know, have that crazy voice so people are like, yeah, this person's really crazy.
Right.
Or whatever. And then in the work at CBC, we were a public broadcaster, so it doesn't fly just to, we have to be, you know, the unbiased, it's a mainstream newsroom, fair and balanced, etc. And it was interesting, I was involved in a piece, there's a movement, there was just a big cabinet shuffle, but there was a minister, I'm not sure if she's still the justice minister, but she was, a big cabinet shuffle, I'm not sure where she is right now, but it was a bill to ban face coverings in public service jobs or any public service, so not allowed in schools, healthcare, etc. It's obviously specifically targets Muslim women who wear the niqab or the burqa.
Right.
So it was quite easy to find someone who was saying, we need to ban this. We actually got the minister on. But the other side was really interesting to get because we found a Muslim woman who wears a niqab who is very, very Canadian. Like, she speaks like me. She has a master's in economics. She's, and just finding somebody who was so well-spoken and away from the stereotype of the sort of like the fresh off the boat, marginalized woman that is being used as sort of an icon of,
right,
of promoting this as a feminist idea. So that was a really cool story to be involved in because we got a lot of feedback of people being like, I was completely surprised by how my mind was changed. Like, just,
yeah,
and that was so cool to hear.
Yeah.
Like people being like, I totally didn't agree with this and I don't think the women should have their face covered. But hearing that woman, it was like, oh yeah, if women can't cover their faces to go see the doctor, then they're just not going to go see the doctor. They're just not going to go to school, you know? So
when you're doing, so do you simultaneously do both? So the community radio station and the CBC?
One pays me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you, you personally, do you find that you enjoy one more? I'm just curious, sort of, I don't know, I always want, you know, sort of we all live in our little bubbles, and I know that every single person I spend the majority of my time with is closer to my own views about things, you know what I mean? And the books I read, the magazines I read, the newspapers I read, it's all stuff I already believe in and people that I do. So it's always nice to sort of get the other side, to be challenged, you know, to have your views challenged, which they really should be every once and again. And so I'm just curious, like, not if you enjoy one more than the other, I guess, but sort of how does that work out for you in a very personal sense?
The more I work for CBC, the more CKUT gets pushed to the back burner, just because it's a lot more demanding. At CKUT, I'm a volunteer, so I essentially get to, you know, make my own deadlines, make my own time frame, work at my own pace.
Right.
Whereas at CBC, I've got, you know, like a producer and then a director and then an executive producer and then a regional director, like this structure, like breathing down my neck.
Right.
And I have to produce on time. So, and then also at CKUT I get to pick my assignments. I only get to cover stuff that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Whereas it's been really nice being pushed out of that comfort zone at the CBC, even if sometimes I'm sitting there like, why am I here?
Right.
So yeah, it's been really interesting doing both. I don't know if I could quite compare the two.
Yeah. That's very interesting. It's funny that, you know, you said that putting something on the air, like the personal story of the woman wearing the burqa and someone calls and says, oh my God. It's there was the mine explosion in West Virginia, the Massey Energy Mine, 26 guys died. You know, it was just like right down the road from us because where we are, it's like Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia, and we're all in the same, I drive to Virginia in 5 minutes. That's where you go to buy beer, is, you know, 5 minutes over. And so we all went there and covered that, and then we went and covered the funeral services and Obama's eulogy and everything. And, you know, we live in a very non-friendly to our current administration area. So I wanted to put Obama's eulogy on the air because it was incredibly elegant. He handled it very, very well. And I was nervous as hell to do this. And so, really, because, you know, sometimes it just gets a little tiring to constantly be told that you're evil. And, you know, so, but we aired it. And I'm on the air Wednesday mornings, and so I aired it, and I'm just like sitting there, you know, and it's playing, and I'm waiting for the phone to start ringing in the on-air studio, which it does. The light starts blinking and everything, and everything was positive, and that I felt like, oh my God. And so, and it was all miners that were calling, you know, all, because if you're, that's the thing, if one miner dies, all miners mourn. It's that kind of, you know, real brotherhood. And so I remember the one guy, and people were like, oh, thanks for playing this. And the one guy said to me, you just did more for WMMT's relationships with coal miners than if you had played every single request we ever make, which would be like a whole lot of Led Zeppelin, Bob Seger, something like that. But, or not Led Zeppelin, but Led Zeppelin, yes, but, Eagles. It would be the Eagles and Bob Seger. Nobody wants that. So yeah, and I was just like, and I was shocked. Like, it's something that I thought would upset people and that would really sort of polarize people, brought them more together. And then so that assists them in looking at our president and our current administration in a different light. So he's not just the guy trying to take away their jobs by trying to block the blockage of streams with rubble. He's also the guy who says, really important things to these people. And so I learned that lesson. That was sort of my lesson. Like, really don't underestimate your listening audience. They're smarter than you give them credit for, which was a really good lesson for me. So did anybody, sort of any other issues? You're sitting back there and I'm curious whom you might be with.
I'm on the radio council, and that's why I'm sitting in on this.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
So I live in Northern Greene County, which is mostly conservative.
Yeah.
And the reason why we wanted this kind of workshop here is to figure out how to make sure that the community radio station is inclusive, even with the more conservative group,
right.
Because they are a huge part of Greene County. I mean, I'm like a very quiet Democrat, and nobody in the Republican bins really can tell. So
you blend in well.
I blend in. So, I think it's very. You know, I think it's very important to not only be very, you know, liberal left wing, or even be that have that perception.
Right. Absolutely. So I mean,
so you know, there's because you want everyone to listen,
right.
And you want them to feel comfortable listening in.
Right. So we just got this funding from the EPA to do this gas drilling project, and so we were all sort of sitting there and thinking, okay, how are we going to get the stories from the people that aren't already out there telling their story, you know? So we're trying to think of ways, you know, so we've got our PSAs running on our station saying, you know, if you have a personal story to tell about gas drilling in the region, please. But then I thought, wait a minute, I might be trying to reach people that don't listen to WMMT. Like, I can't assume that everyone listens. So then it was, now we have to move on to other media. So we put ads in some of the local newspapers looking for people who have a story to tell, and then put up some posters. And we've done that with a few different issues. because you always want to grow your audience, always grow your audience. It's interesting that you said, you know, you guys don't feel like you sort of need to grow your audience at the community radio station because you already have this sort of...
I don't know if that's actually like station policy, but I think that it's like we don't... The audience that I know of is definitely of a certain mind.
Right.
And the station definitely has a very specific mandate.
Yeah.
And makes no sort of pretenses about their biases.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, because when I heard that, I was like, wow, to be so lucky to say... You know, like, oh, we're doing fine.
A lot of people listen.
Yeah, that's
there's
great. Yeah.
A huge, you know,
very progressive
of that mind.
Sort of, yeah.
It's a big population, it's a diverse city, so you can,
yeah.
You can kind of get lost in any kind of mind frame.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, our mission is to include everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's,
our mission is to make sure that everyone's voice is heard, so that way it's not like one, we don't want there to be a fraction of people who, you know, that's the community station. Like, we want the community station to be a true reflection of everyone, from people who are not, you know, like maybe a small percentage of the community to those who are the larger percentage.
Right.
We want to really have that balance.
And, you know, as far as, and my, is to really reach out to those people that are not your, that don't always immediately come to you or that you immediately sort of come to mind when you think of people that might be involved in your radio station. And so you have to reach out to those people, especially being a brand new station. You know, so you, you know, the local, like a local chamber of commerce where we live in Whitesburg is, they are almost insufferable. And, but we go to those meetings and we talk to people. And then some of those people are now programmers for our radio station. It's so funny, when we started the Holler to the Hood show, or Calls from Home, the prison show that airs on WMMT, there was a prison guard that came on the air that was a programmer right after that show went off. So that show started at 7, went off at 9, and then like 9 to midnight was a prison guard who came in and did the show. We go to places where we're not really sometimes welcome, really, because people have very sort of ideas of what we're doing, and then we really try to change their minds about that. You need to go, being a new station, you need to go and try to recruit people, really, that that wouldn't otherwise seek you out. And you do this for... one, money, and two, for a diversity of voices on your radio station. And also, you know, it was one of the most interesting ways that I think we at WMMT manage to reach everybody is that even if people have this perceived idea of our politics, they still enjoy the hell out of bluegrass music. Not that that's all we play, by the way. There are people who, in our community, that just think that we are nothing but just a bunch of, you know, crazy, we get hippies all the damn time. I'm like, I'm the farthest thing from a damn hippie. But we get that all the time from people. But we also host a concert series called Bluegrass Express Live. And it packs. I mean, in November, I've got, you know, Dr. Ralph Stanley coming, you know, and it's sold out, it's packed, and it's packed with people who would never otherwise walk into the Apple Shop building. Because it's like that place is, you know, for certain people in the community, that place is like the devil, you know. But they walk in there. They walk in there weekly to do their radio shows. They sit down, they come in there for our concerts. We had a black lung hearing, which was, you know, it was not polarizing at all. It was, hey, you've got black lung, here's how we can help you out. So the miners walked in and sat down and had a conversation. So planning cultural events on your radio station or, you know, through your radio station is a really great way to bring in people. Just as barn raising, for instance, is awesome, you know, for the community. But if you think about other things you can do to reach out to people in your community that maybe otherwise would not be seeking you out on the FM dial, it's a pretty awesome thing. It's so funny. We have the world's only live radio cooking show that we know of. We put parentheses on the top, that we know of. And so we did a campfire show. So outside the building, the parking lot, built a big fire. And we have these three fantastic cooks, like one's a doctor, one's a stay-at-home mom, and one's a literature teacher. And so they cooked all this food outside, and we're broadcasting live, right? And so all these kids, because we normally do this upstairs in our kitchen, but all these kids from the neighborhood came riding their bikes over. And they're all like kind of standing there, and they're watching us, and there's this one little kid, and he has a transistor radio strapped to the front of his bike. And it made my day, my week, my month, because he was like, oh, we should ride around and listen to WMMT. I was like, and he's like 9 years old. And I was like, what? You know, yay. But what's so funny is all these kids came over, they're like five or six of them. And they're like, can we stand here and watch? I'm like, absolutely. And then the three people that are cooking, you know, they invite the kids over. They're like, oh, you want to come over here and, you know, stir this for me and do this. And so the kids and then, you know, I'm like, what are your all's names? And they say their names on the air. And all this other stuff, and so it's really awesome for them. And then they all go, I've always wanted to know what it looks like inside that building. So I take them on a tour. I take them into the theater, into the recording studios, you know, all this stuff, take them everywhere. And then they leave. And they go, a couple of them go to school with my daughter. And so they later, they told her that their mothers tell them, don't you dare go near that Apple Shop building because everyone in there is gay. And I was like, oh my God.
Gay hippies.
Gay hippies. We're all gay hippies. And I was like, what? And she said, seriously, mommy, their moms tell them all to stay away from Apple Shop because they're all gay, you know. And then we hear from older people in the community who say that when they were kids, you know, older people being in their mid-30s, early 40s, but when they were kids, their parents would make them walk on the opposite side of the street from Apple Shop because they were convinced that everyone who worked in there was a drug addict and that they were gonna come out, you know, and kill little kids. So this is what we deal with in our community. And it may not be as intense in your all's community.
No, we definitely have that here.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like in what sort of issues? I mean, not it can't be WGHC.
Well, I live in Greene County.
Right.
Also. And yeah, hi. And there's just a divide off the bat of people just coming across the river. And then you can get into all sorts of subdivides going into the gay thing, the hippie drug thing, whatever you want to do, it's here.
There's also the transplant and the, you know, the people who were born here and raised here versus
the New York
versus
folks coming
the
north.
Weekenders.
Right.
If there's the mountain in Greene County, there's the mountain in the valley.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the equivalent would be here. But then there's that whole river where you can't get across it. I mean, there's a lot of different...
So you got, like, people who are already resentful that this is in Hudson.
Oh, well.
Even though we're going to have a studio over there, but that's... I mean, I know that I'm also from Greene County, and this the thing about how whether you were born, and even if your parents were born, if you... People I know who have lived 25, 35, 40 years in Greene County are not considered local.
Right, yeah.
They are considered long time livers in Greene County, right? I mean, you find this, if you are local and you grew up there, it, then you are related to somebody on the fire department, on the police force, in county
right.
government, you're related to somebody in the school system, and you have all those connections. And if you and usually there's
system.
Some street named after somebody in your family, right? These small family names of these longtime families, and then everybody else is essentially a newcomer. Like you said, there's the new newcomers and the older newcomers. I know that when I was talking about this barn raising with some of the folks I work with in Catskill across the river, and I was mentioning one of the workshops that I was doing yesterday, and I said, we're doing a workshop with the Community Action Agency, which serves low-income people, and they were all like, oh, that's great. And I said, yeah, it's, you know, sort of about fighting poverty and kind of this connection between economic justice and media. One of the guys I work closely with was sort of like, economic justice, I'll tell you, when you say that, that brings a lot of things to mind. And then he said, you know, we have to think about the fact that this radio station is going to be controversial, and the more we associate with it, we have to be careful. Now, this isn't, the person I was talking to is part of an organization who sees their mission as serving the underserved.
Wow.
They see their mission as serving the underserved. They're very clear that we're doing community work, somebody who's on the board of a community organization. but the language of economic justice, when I said low-income, helping low-income people, oh yes, we want to help. When I said the term economic justice, I watched the color come to this man's face.
Right.
And he automatically thought, uh-oh, this radio station's gonna be controversial. So I, that was, to me, this just happened like last week, and I was like, wow.
You know, what's funny is that the way, when we're doing public affairs pieces about, and the gas drilling is becoming a giant issue, but it's been coal.
Is this hydraulic fracturing? Is that what it
is? Yeah.
This is in West Virginia, is it?
I'm in Eastern Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky.
I'm in Whitesburg.
Kentucky, okay.
So we are doing, currently working on a project that is about the gas drilling in Kentucky and Southwest Virginia.
They had a big fight in New York. I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah. No, I got the audio from it. I was about to say. Yeah, I've been thinking of it. Yeah. I mean, it's...
It happened in like 40 states or something.
The last I read, which was in a piece that was just recently come out, it's 32 different states. Mm-hmm. But everyone knows the Marcellus Shale. That's the big, big story. We are not on the Marcellus Shale. We're all part of the Devonia Shale, Marcellus, but we're on the Cleveland Shale and something else. This great article, I was leaving the gas caucus, the fractured caucus yesterday evening, and there's this great article that said that the natural gas located in Appalachia, it is now, they've discovered that it is the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. That's kind of scary. But what I was going to say, you're talking about economic justice, you know? So when we're doing our public affairs programming, we do not use trigger words. We make it a point to not use trigger words, because if someone has on the radio in our area and they hear the word sustainability, they're going to go click and turn it off. And they're not going to listen to it, and they're not going to learn anything, because they will immediately hear a word and think, hell no, I'm not listening to that. I'm sorry?
Do you have a list of those words?
Yeah, it's a good point.
I think I might make a list of those words and distribute them. Yeah.
Well, I know one around here. Antique dealer is a euphemism.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
funny. You know, I'm just thinking that maybe those of us involved with this radio station, we should make sure we have a meeting after this one for everybody to share what they learned in each workshop and follow up on it, because this might be, it might not be a bad idea to like name it, right? It's an evolving list, it's changing,
right. Oh, yeah.
But to just be conscious.
A list of conscious words that would make people turn the dial.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like if a quote comes from somebody and we've got the actual audio of someone saying mountaintop removal,
just as far as
reporting,
from a reporter,
right.
Coming from WGXC.
What do you do about your programmers, though? I mean, you know,
programmers. Oh boy,
they say whatever they want.
They say whatever they want, to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I do have a programmer named Willard Hall, and there's a part of me that says, you know, he's on his way out because he's old and it's probably best. But on the other hand, it's kind of like you get your crazies, but they belong to you. You know what I mean? But so he was on the air one day and I'm sitting upstairs in the office. You know, we always got it turned on, always at my house. It's always turned on, like low, just to make sure we don't have dead air. So I'm sitting upstairs and I hear him on the thing. And he says, he's sending out a song to the coal miners. And he says, coal and... keeps the lights on, and he's going on and on. And if you don't like, anybody that doesn't like coal is stupid. I'm just like, all right. But then he said, everyone upstairs at WMMT is anti-coal, and I don't know what their problem is, because they're sitting up there on their big fancy computers using electricity, and they're anti-coal. And this is right before my spring fun drive. And I jump up and run the hell downstairs and walk into that on-air studio. I said, you're not saying that on the air. What do you mean? And I said, what? Am I anti-coal? I said, really? I said, I'm using electricity just like everybody else. I was like, I am anti-destroying our environment in order to extract the coal. And I looked at him and I said, Willard, you just screwed me. You just screwed us. You want your own, you want a radio show? You need a radio station. If I can't raise funds, there is no radio station. You know, so that's, your programmers can say what they want, but please help them understand that everyone is responsible for keeping you on the air. You know, so.
And you're also planning on airing Democracy Now, right?
Yep.
So just, doesn't really cut any, they don't hold anything back. You know, they
Yeah, but that was one of the most requested shows.
I'm working.
So as long as that's.
I'm just saying that.
I understand that, but we've already had this discussion,
okay.
Believe me.
Okay.
And, you know, there will be plenty of alternatives.
Right.
To show the balance.
I mean, we air something.
So it's not that we're going to say, no, we can't have
right.
this because it's going to show that it's a, you know, that a lot of people maybe that are involved are liberal, you know. But we still have to have that perspective on as well as, you know, another perspective.
Right. I mean, you know, you're probably not going to, like, I mean, I know that there's no way in hell that if we air Democracy Now! That we'd, like, counteract that by carrying Rush Limbaugh show, you know, like.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I have to set myself on fire if I did that, you know.
Well, no, I don't think we're going to.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. But, like, we, even though, you know, we tread this sort of lightly and, you know, we sort of walk this fine line, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we play the Hightower Report. Do you guys know what the Hightower Report is?
Sure.
Okay. So it is a Jim Hightower out of Texas. And he is, I actually don't enjoy it because he comes at everything from a negative standpoint. But it is a left leaning. So, but he comes on and it says, "This is Jim Hightower, and you know, the senators on the blah 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 were getting $75 massages, and you know, the you know, like he really sort of tells you what's going on in the world from a very sort of liberal leaning area, and he kind of complains about it for a little while, and then says, you know, essentially the goal of the Hightower Report is to. Some people really like it because it's like the really in-your-face other side, you know? It's sort of like the Glenn Beck kind of a thing, you know, where it's like an in-your-face and rude, you know? But from the other side. So we air that. We absolutely air that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then after that, you have a recording of me saying, "The opinions expressed on the Hightower Report do not necessarily reflect those of WMMT, Apple Shop, or its funders." Just like that, you know, like, and I put that on there because it doesn't, you know, we've got a diverse board, diverse staff. My director of development, his brother is a strip miner, you know.
I wonder how you do that in the case of Democracy Now!, which considers itself a news program.
Right.
So you wouldn't necessarily be able to say the opinions of this, but
right.
You mean maybe there's something else that says immediately afterwards, it does say WGXC is a community run station that you know,
represents
all
our communities.
All our communities. You know, we want to hear what you think, and we want to hear you on the air, or something. You know, something that.
Yeah, you missed some of the audio
I
played.
Sorry, I was late.
No, it's okay. We run on MFT. We run a and it airs probably just twice a day. It's not obnoxious or anything, but something where we say MFT. And this is about the coal issue, really. We say, you know, climate change and all these things are issues we're talking about. We'd like to know what you'd like to hear on the air. We'd like you to express your opinion. You can come in, you can record it, you can write us, we'll report it. You know, please send it to blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, you know, and I played some examples of various people from sort of both sides of the issue. So we do that. But I wouldn't, you know, Democracy Now!, it really is a news show, you know? I forget, there is some...
Some people might get exposed to it that have don't even know it exists
now
in Greene County.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking
awesome.
They might go, wow, what is this? They might kind of get turned on to something.
Yeah, I mean, it just have a lot of voices that you won't hear anywhere else. I think
right.
a lot of
and
them are rational,
cool.
like,
yeah. and
reasonable
that's totally cool.
sounding.
It was one of the most requested shows.
I'm trying to think, there is a traditionally conservative... newsman, like old-fashioned newsman, and there's this great quote in which he said, "The only honest news out there is Democracy Now."
Right. Was it like
Bill Moyer, maybe? Bill Moyer?
Moyer's a big fan.
No.
Yeah.
But I do like this idea of both having throughout the day what you said, but also something after certain programs that might just be a way of not discounting that program,
right? But saying,
but just
we
saying
all
this is
yeah.
part of our mix, so that anybody who just turns off and hears that. Hopefully, and stays on, hears, knows. I don't know, I'm just thinking something.
I mean, I don't think you should have to do that personally. But
not necessarily
I don't live in this community.
No,
so
but I think we're going to have some sort of overall statement that just covers us.
That just says, I think in general, when anybody hears something on an eclectic station, I guess there's some way to let folks know if you've just tuned it in, there's lots of other stuff coming. So they don't turn it on and say, oh, this is a bluegrass station, because that's all they
hear. Under the exact same, really, you're absolutely right, because when I am on the air on Wednesday mornings, I play mostly indie rock. And following me is a woman that does a bluegrass gospel show. I mean, the people that, you know, like if you're driving and it's like 9:59 and you've got me going out with, I don't know, whatever. And then you've got her coming off like, But when I sit there on the air, right, you know, and I say, oh, you know, coming up, you've got Barefoot Nelly with Bluegrass Patches and following that. So because you let everybody know, we've got diversity in all our programming, whether that be music or public affairs. Because, yeah, you don't ever want to have someone turn it on and want to turn it off. And I had a real recent sort of interesting thing happen with this. Travel and Leisure magazine, this guy was doing an article about the places you find when you're listening to internet radio. And so he was trying to find real community radio, nothing supported by NPR, anything, just real community radio. And a friend of his said, well, there's this WMMT. So he started listening to us, and he told me, he said, when I first turned it on, it was bluegrass. And I thought, oh my God, I hate this crap. And he said, and I would turn it on the next day, and it was more banjos. And he thought, Jesus Christ, I don't even want to talk to these people, you know. And he said, and then I turned it on another day, and there was a Bruce Springsteen song, and then there was a Wilco song. And I was like, hang on, wait a second, you know. And so thankfully he came back a third time, but not all your listeners will. So letting them know up front, maybe, that you have a diversity of programming musically and public affairs is a good way to approach that. So, no. Anything else? I know it's supposed to go to 5:45, but I don't feel like we need to stretch it if there's nothing else to say. Any other additional comments or questions?